Okay, Mr. Warren, Mr. Scott, carry on.
Directors, Ron Warren, Fish Program, here to talk to you about the Grays Harbor Salmon Management Policy for the third time. So our purpose today is to brief the commission on the management policy process and seek input on the policy or for policy enhancements. So the outline is we just really are trying to answer some questions and what are the challenges to improve Grays Harbor Basin fisheries? What are the primary objectives of the draft plan? What are the major points of the public comment? And how could the draft be improved? We want to be able to answer some of those questions for you today, or at least give you our insights and what we've seen. So I'll start off with a common slide. This is our Chehalis Chinook 2000 through 2012. It shows the actual run size as a postseason number in the blue line or the top line that goes through. The solid straight line that runs across at 12,364 is the escapement goal, and then the orange colored line is the natural spawners that occur. And then those who like to look at graphs and things in more in depth, that space between that natural spawner and the actual run size is the harvest that occurs on given years. So some of the challenges that we face in the Chehalis fisheries for wild Chinook is that we are reliant upon the wild Chinook population and its sustainable return. We have a very small hatchery program. Currently, the program is approximately 8% of the return to the Chehalis Basin. We know that the habitat is degraded to approximately 68% reduction in the productivity of the natural population. We also know that there is substantial harvest that occurs north of U.S., in or north of Washington in Alaska and Canada, approximately 48% harvest rate in those northern fisheries, which really limits the number of fish available for harvest in Washington waters. So to further exemplify that and show additional complication, just the multi-management entities and stakeholders that are involved in the fishery, starting off farthest north, Pacific Salmon Commission, and the obligations to implement the treaty, the Quinault Indian Nation, the Chehalis Tribe, us as the resource agency, we have commercial constituents, we have recreational constituents, and those recreational constituents based or split up into those estuary, lower river, and upper river fisheries that all have a desire to have a piece of that very, very small pie. So to further examine that small pie, we look at the projected distribution of the 2013, the run that we're just finalizing or just completed fisheries on, and have planned through the last North Falcon process. And it's estimated that the Alaska Canadian fishery, out of the total number of adults coming back, are taking just shy of 14,000 fish. The Quinault Nation, 1,384. Chehalis Tribe, 229. And you can see the numbers. 48% of those fish are going to the northern fisheries, where you have 10% going to local constituents and then 42% going to the spawning grounds. It's pretty staggering, the small numbers of fish that we're talking about and the difficulty in parsing those out to the different constituents. So what are the primary objectives of the policy? we know that we have to improve and enhance our conservation focus. Even with small numbers of fish, we have to assure that we meet our conservation goals. To do that, we need to have a high technical rigor. We need to look at and implement intelligent in-season management, and we need to monitor and enforce the fisheries that we have. This process, more than any other process I've been through in 34 years, has diminished the trust that we have from the public behind me. And we have to work our butts off to gain that trust back. We have to communicate, we have to be transparent, we have to be accountable to them and to you as a commission. And we also have, what we're hoping is to clarify those sharing of impacts of that very small piece of the resource that I talked about earlier. So over the course of the last month, we had public testimony and written public comment. So at the December commission meeting, you heard from 18 individuals, and about that time to just this couple of days ago, we had 41 written comments. And what we've done is we've summarized those written comments. You have a full summary of comments that we've supplied to you. We will just highlight some of those comments for you today. But you do have a packet of those comments that we will also put online so that our constituency can see what has been said or offered to the agency. So the categories that we split this up into are the ones you see. You can see that allocation, conservation, communication and transparency, and economic value of the fisheries were the highlights of the comments that we received. Allocation and conservation, from my perspective, far exceeding the other comments on the other, from the other categories. So some of those comments that we heard, we are lumping them into those areas of focus and why we need the policy, why we wanted to bring the policy to you. These are not unlike what you heard last month. They should look very familiar. Make conservation the number one priority. Don't allocate to the last fish. Those key issues, including the needs for us to pay attention and do what we can for habitat, as well as when appropriate and if able, to reduce those pre-terminal interceptions that I showed you earlier. To restore and maintain the public trust, we've heard comments on communication. We have to improve communication because that public trust has been lost. We have to try to increase the public involvement. We talked about that yesterday at the North Falcon presentation. And we need to, as we just heard from the gentleman in public testimony, try to involve the youth of the state to get them involved so that as grandpas, grandmas, moms, and dads step out of the fishery, that the young kids of the state take their place and continue to enjoy those outdoor activities. And we have to improve co-management. Transparency, we think we've made strides in sharing what the legal framework is with the Chehalis tribe and how those pieces come off the non-treaty share. We've done our best, but we'll continue to strive to clarify the plan that we have or the policies that we put before you and before the public. And then accountable. We just need to be able to put it in context of those metrics that are measurable, and we can look at performance. And then document the catch sharing and share that with folks. And then the catch sharing, we have to do support the allocation, not on public comment, but allow it to be science driven. We have to look at this, and these are mainly comments relative to the commercial fishery, that the commercial fishery provide fish to all Washington residents, increase harvest on abundant stocks, recreational opportunities exist elsewhere, so you could add more to the commercial fishery, and initiate buyback to enhance the economic value of the commercial fishery. Those are comments that we heard that we lumped under that clarifying of sharing impacts. From a sport perspective, under the same sharing impacts, we heard that the recreational fishery has a significant economic value, and that the tribes provide the commercial fish for market, that the gill nets have a negative impact, and that the cost of our management far exceeds the value of the commercial fishery that we manage. And then we've heard very strongly to support the upriver recreational fisheries. In addition to those, we've heard a support for a 4-3 proposal to enhance, and subsequent to that comment, it would, as proposed, enhance recreational opportunity and protect components, add a conservation tool. That's a perception of the public. We have, as you know, been trying to analyze that and try to understand how it would be applied and how we could use that as a tool. So how could the draft policy be improved? We think that what we've heard from the public throughout, both in comments that you've heard, we've received, and our numerous public meetings, that we have to do a better job of sharing and communicating with our constituents, offering the gateway into a topic for further involvement via a web page or collaborative workshops with our stakeholders. We think those are ways that we could strengthen or improve the policy by having those included into the policy, and have continued efforts by staff to do those things. We have to continue to strengthen conservation and include explicit precautionary management, and we have to communicate that as well. We have to consider provisions to promote orderly fisheries. We can't continue to have those conflicts, and we have to work at trying to find those areas, whether in time or area, that help reduce those options. And then we have to further refine those sharing options that we've talked so much about over the course of the last few months. So the process that we've been through so far is that we met with you in December. We had initial public comment. We initiated a 30-day public comment on then the draft policy. Last month, you reviewed public comment. You received additional public comment, and commission provided us some additional direction on the policy. I'm sorry. I read that wrong, didn't I? So this month, we are hoping that we've shared with you the public comments, and we hope that you can provide us additional direction on the policy. And then next month, we hope that if direction is given, that we can solicit additional public comment and then bring that back to you, share that with you with a revised policy for your consideration and possible adoption. So that is a very, very quick run through. With the anticipated crowd, we tried to keep it short. I will leave the catch areas up just in case there are questions or concerns. happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Any questions? Thank you, Ron, and your compatriot there. No questions, it looks like. Thanks very much. We're all anxious to get to the public input. And for those of you who have handouts, you need to give them to Tammy. Tammy will distribute them, not right away, but after this meeting, we'll make sure that everything is circulated. Okay, we've got about 22 people who've signed up. So we'll do the same as with the open public input. You have 3 minutes when you hear the beeping noise, and please do try to pay attention. When you hear the beeping noise, that means your 3 minutes is up, and we'd like you to conclude your remarks. I'll call you up two at a time, and you can sit just before the mic. Pick a chair that has a mic in front of it. Okay, we'll start with Gary Johnson and Norm Reinhardt. Okay, Mr. Johnson.
Good morning, commissioners. Thank you for taking the time today to address our changes and resources and making that a priority. I'd like to see the overharvest of fisheries come to a halt. How many times do we see WDFW rule change? Close to fishing, reason for action, hatcheries have not been able to meet egg take or brood stock. This is irresponsible and does not protect the future generations. We want accountability if escapement goal is not met, and answers why. The $200,000 to $300,000 spent by the department to monitor commercial fisheries in Grays Harbor is not money well spent. We would like to see this money back into production and broodstock programs. Everybody in this room knows how much money is generated to the state's economy from recreational fishing. Recreational fishers are forced by regulations to be selective in their harvest. Gill nets are not selective and kill multiple species while fishing for sturgeon. While fishing sturgeon, steelhead, chum, birds, and seals will continue to be killed as long as gill nets are fishing. Who picks up after the commercial gill net fleet? Conservation organizations and some American natives are doing the work, not commercial fishers. Millions have been spent in Puget Sound, Nooksack River, and Grays Harbor. 3 years of cleanup alone in Grays Harbor removed up to 90 ghost nets that continue to kill long after they have been abandoned. Washington and Oregon are the last two states in the lower 48 to have this outdated method of harvest. Everybody can see the results. New methods need to be implemented and kill nets removed from the Northwest waters. WDFW has to do a better job to manage all fisheries, including tribal. It's time to step up to the plate. A recovery in our state watersheds will not happen until there is a focus on this aspect of commercial fisheries. Like all of us, they need to be held to their quotas and not to a net schedule. Our rivers statewide have been robbed of nutrients for the sake of money. These carcasses need to be relocated back into the systems they came from. I can tell you personally, the PR stunt from the company that buys these fish from the hatcheries is not working. Our food bank no longer serves this low-grade quality of fish. Would you eat salmon from a processing pond at a hatchery that has sat there until it's ready for spawning? Logging companies, enhancement groups, and other local organizations have spent countless labor hours and dollars improving habitat, yet we have no more fish to the gravel. Escapement goals and wild broodstock numbers have not increased to match the habitat. The department is more focused on allocation than the future of fisheries. Their track record continues to prove by this by admitted failures, overharvest, failed models, inaccurate data, and above all, not making changes to protect generations in our fish populations. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Bob Lake. Okay, Mr. Reinhardt.
Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Norm Reinhardt from the Kitsap Pogey Club. I was surprised at this morning's presentation. I'm glad to see that the department is refocusing on conservation as one leg of the harvest of our Chinook salmon in Grace Harbor. I'm also pleased to see what I hope is an effort to think outside of the box in in-season management for these same fish. My hope is that we can take a look at other ways of having the recreational component of that saltwater fishery report their catch so that we do not overexploit those Chinook within the Chehalis system. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Jerry Lowe, come forward, please. Mr. Lake.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Commissioners. My name is Bob Lake, and I am speaking on behalf of, as the Grays Harbor Gill letter. I'm going to read a letter that was sent to me yesterday, and this is from South Bend Products. You might have received this, Washington Fish and Wildlife Commission, January 8, 2014. Commissioners, my name is Dean Anage, Managers of South Bend Products, a seafood processing company located in South Bend. I'm writing to express my interest in the Grays Harbor non-treaty gillnet fishery. South Bend Products purchases a large percentage of the harvested fish from Grays Harbor. The fishery produces high-quality fish that are marketed throughout the country. Please consider the fact that in addition, the income the fishery provides to the fishermen, it provides jobs to on-site buyers and crew, truck drivers, plant workers, and office staff. Reduction or elimination of the non-treaty fishery is a reduction of jobs in Grays Harbor Pacific counties. I would appreciate your consideration of maintaining the non-treaty fishing opportunities in Grays Harbor. Regards, Dean Anage. The second letter I've got is from the Coalition of Coastal Fisheries, and this is 15 different user groups in the state, all commercial groups, which includes charter boats, trollers, salmon for all, purse seiners, and says subject letter of support. The Coalition of Coastal Fishermen supports the Grays Harbor Gillnetters non-treaty gillnet fishery. Our membership voted unanimously to support the Grays Harbor Gillnetters Associations to have a viable non-treaty commercial fisheries in Grays Harbor. The Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife Commission and the Department of Fish and Wildlife have a duty to maintain and enhance the fishing industry in the state for both commercial and recreational fishers, as noted in the RCW. During the process of forming a management guideline for Grays Harbor, the Coalition urges the Washington Fish and Wildlife Commission and the Department of Fish and Wildlife to base their decisions on sound fishery science, not public opinion. Commercial fishing throughout the state provides a high source of quality seafood for the non-fishing consumers that are taxpayers that help support WDFW's budget and hatcheries throughout the state. Local businesses and processors will also suffer from monetary losses if this fishery is lost. Thank you for consideration in this matter. Also, I'd like to comment on person who spoke before me, the thing about $250,000 to $300,000 spent on staff to regulate the commercial fishery, I believe he left a few things out, and that would be that if that information is not drafted and compiled accordingly, you couldn't have any recreational fisheries. So they all work hand in hand. So before you start slamming staff, you got to know where things are really happening. Because without that information, you couldn't generate any fishery, according to the PFMC manager. Thank you very much. If there's any questions.
Thank you. John Campbell, would you come forward, please? Okay, Mr. Lowe.
Madam Chairman, members of the commission, my name is Jerry Lowe. Today I brought a newspaper, front page of the Olympian, for your enjoyment. You'll get that later. And the rationale was there's an article on the front page. It was Christmas time in Olympia, and it tells about the people standing in line, literally outside the fish shop, local fish shop here, waiting to purchase. The article says mainly crab, but it's all of the fish products that are available to the public in the state of Washington. It's hard to put a value on the commercial fishery in this state. And what we have here today, we've got the sportsmen asking for the salmon in Grays Harbor, all of the fishing licenses in the state of Washington, sport fishing licenses, comprise about 5% of the population, 5% of our people. The other 95% are dependent on the commercial fisheries to provide them with seafood. In 2013, spring salmon from the Columbia River literally went over $40 a pound. That's how much the demand is for these fish. This was in the Portland market. Throughout the summer, the price remained around $400 per salmon, per king salmon in Pike's Market in Seattle. This was based on the poundage figure. It's so much a pound, but a 20-pound fish was over $400. And yet, in the spring fishery last year, the commercial fishermen were limited to 9 fish. By this time, some of the sportsmen already had more than 9 fish. Well, what we need is a limit on how many the sportsmen can have in the state of Washington. We only have so many fish. If a sportsman that gets 10 Chinook and 15 coho, that should be enough fish to supply them fish every day of the year. Plus, they get all the steelhead they can catch and the jacks. Thank you.
Please keep the noise in the audience down so that we can hear everyone clearly and fairly.
Did the 20 seconds.
Okay, 20 seconds you have.
Last time I was here, I had a handout for you, and I'd like to amend that just a little bit. This map here indicates that 2A, that's the area the commercials get. And the map that I handed out to you in the handout last time showed the sports areas, and I had a recommendation of where I thought the sports areas should extend to, and I'd like to change that. I used recognizable landmarks to arrive at my cutoffs for the sport fishery, but I'd like to change that to our enhancement areas. Most of the streams and tributaries have a hatchery or an enhancement area of some kind on them in Grays Harbor, and I think the sport should be limited from that point down. They should stay out of the hatchery areas, the spawning beds of the wild fish, and the rearing areas for the wild fish, and stay below the hatchery areas. All right, thanks.
Thank you. John Raby, please come forward. Okay, Mr. Campbell.
Chair Wecker, members of the commission, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to provide input on the Grays Harbor Management Plan. And first of all, I'd like to voice support for option A in this plan, especially the point of 3 net free days per week. And I'm thinking primarily of meeting escapement goals through that method. My professional background focused on improving process reliability in a large manufacturing plant. And it was a critical survival issue in a competitive world. And I would say the reliability concept of plan, do, check, and act applies directly to fishery management. The plan does intend to meet escapement goals, and it intends to do so by executing a harvest-based model. A reliable process, and there was some words about accountability in here, but a reliable process would also include review of failures and developing a plan to ensure that future failures were eliminated. And that part's missing from this plan. There's no look back. This plan has a major reliability void. What's missing is the requirement to identify each failure and develop plans that will achieve escapement goals the following year. There's also a complete lack of accountability. It was kind of addressed, but it wasn't real accountability on a personal level. When escapement goals are missed, there's no accountability for that. And missing these goals should have consequences. Anyway, I had 4 recommendations for the commission to try and improve this. One was require an annual river-by-river review of the prior escapement with respect to meeting the goal, and then ensure that each goal that's missed by some, say, a significant margin anyway, will have an action plan that will everyone, all the staff will agree it's going to meet the goal the next year. Focused on meeting that goal, it becomes a priority. Then assure the staff that over-escapement will not be considered a waste of resources and that complaining harvest groups will be ignored, period. And then assure staff that they are responsible for meeting these goals and the future failures have consequences for those responsible. That's where it's at. People are planning to meet these things and they need to be responsible. Thank you very much. Appreciate your listening.
Thank you. Steve Franson, please come forward. Okay, Mr. Raby.
Good morning. My name is John Raby. I'm from Montesano. My talk focuses mainly on Steelhead, but I end with my comments on the Chinook program, too. 34 years ago, the Washington Department of Wildlife tried to save the Steelhead Run in the Wanuchi River by closing the river to all anglers for 5 years. When it opened for the 84-85 season, the Steelhead had made a miraculous recovery. The numbers reported at the Wanuchi fish trap jumped from a low of 38 steelhead in 79 to 768 in 85. The department's efforts had been a tremendous success, and the river's first season was filled with large wild steelhead. It became apparent the next season that the department's emphasis had changed from protection and recovery to allocation. The Wanuchi became the go-to river for anglers from all over the state. Tribal netters became very efficient at netting steelhead. Everyone seemed to be catching fish. But what was the impact to the river's wild steelhead? This became evident during the 04-05 fishing season. The tribal netters did very well, exceeding their projected catch numbers by mid-February. Local anglers noted a poor return to Chehalis tributaries and petitioned the department for an early closure to the gillnet season. Co-manager director Phil Anderson had acknowledged that the tribe had exceeded their catch estimate, but under the Bolt decision, were allowed several thousand more fish than had already been taken. Guy Kapoman, vice chairman of the Quinault Nation, furthered this by stating that the Quinaults have never taken all their estimated amount and are entitled to fish until mid-April to catch 3,500 more steelhead. The sportsman's request was denied and fishing continued as scheduled. At the end of the season, the tribe catch record totaled 6,164 steelhead. Of that number, 2,900 were wild steelhead. According to their tribal records, 600 fish were taken from the Chehalis during the first 2 weeks of March. Of those, 440 fish were wild steelhead. Records from the fish trap below the Wanuchi Dam reported 30 steelhead trapped during the same time period. Sadly, only three were wild. The 2013 year-end trap report totaled 46 wild steelhead. That number is just a few more than the low of 38 reported in 79. The survival of these fish will hinge on a new direction by the department and tribe. The same trap reports indicate that the Wanuchi Chinook Run is also threatened. 2012 showed only 17 adults. 2013, 45 Chinook, the majority of those adult males. I know Judge Bolt did not give the tribe a license to catch the last wild steelhead or Chinook. I am confident that the commission will not allow this to happen either. Thank you.
Thank you. Joe Durham, please come forward. Okay, Mr. Franson.
Good morning, Chair Wecker, commissioners, director and deputy. The department has a rogue region in Region 6. It's gone rogue because it apparently hates fish conservation. It hates fish conservation so much that it can't bend over far enough to accommodate more days of gill nets scheduled in the Grays Harbor. And this continue feeding at the public trough is, it's almost like escapement is met by coincidence and seldom, if ever, by design. Hopefully, these changes in plans will change that. Conservation was apparently so taboo that in-season management couldn't be done. We can't have in-season management. We don't have data that supports in-season management until September 2013, the third week. Suddenly, they got conservation religion, and now we have in-season management. Let's close the harbor for the final week of September, the only week when there's some salmon in the harbor, and it's not wall-to-wall with gill nets. The only week of the year that I schedule many months in advance some days off to go salmon fishing in Grays Harbor, and I select them around that time so that I can drag my cut plug herring unimpeded with competition from gill nets. And because I have a small boat, I select my fishing days for the easy tides that make for the safest water conditions. That fishing opportunity was not available because suddenly we have in-season management. If it achieves conservation, okay. But it's this utter lack of transparency and intellectual honesty about what can and can't be done. And it seems like from this recreational angler's perspective that anything can be done if it results in an additional day of gillnet fishing in the harbor. We can aggregate chum populations so that we mask the over-harvest of most of the natural chum runs in the Chehalis Basin, but we can't go to the previously we would have no Chinook retention, and we could sport fish for coho in Grays Harbor, but not this year. We finally got our dose of conservation in a total closure to fishing. The inconsistency, it also makes it seem like the region not only hates fish conservation, they hate recreational angling as well. I'm hoping that the new Grays Harbor Salmon Management Plan option will reverse course and achieve conservation. One last remark. Mr. Warren said that science drives allocation, or made a remark about science-driven allocation. Allocation is not driven by science. It's driven by law and policy. The state sets the law. You guys set the policy. And allocation follows. Thank you.
Thank you. Jim Rubert? Okay, Mr. Durham?
I want to thank you, Ms. Wecker, for allowing us to speak here today. I want thanks to the Director of Department of Fish and Wildlife and staff. I speak as a sportsman and as a conservation in the Grays Harbor area. I serve on the Grays Harbor Harvest Management Committee and have since the very beginning. At all the public meetings and after the meetings during the time other attendees were allowed to speak, some concerning issues not included in the proposal being presented are not addressed. Conservation. Conservation is lacking within the plan. The plan mainly speaks of maintaining status quo. Enhancement needs to be added to all wording within the proposed plan. Being conservation-minded, I ask, how can we continue to fish into the escapement goals year after year and achieve conservation and recovery? Also missing in the wording, the plan to enhance our wild salmon returns. Guidelines must be applied to rebuild our wild stocks within the Grays Harbor Management Plan. Economic values. With WDFW spending somewhere between $250,000 and $300,000 to manage a non-treated commercial fishery within the Grays Harbor system and the Chehalis River, the average ex-vessel value between 2000 and 2012 was only $92,652 in 2013. If 20 vessels participated in this program, an average value of only $4,632 per boat. Based on the average catch, this amounts to an average vessel value, ex-vessel value of $13 per fish. Does this sound like economical value? Diverting the commercial non-treaty catch to sport anglers would add an additional $700,000 per year to the economic value of these fish. Marine Area 2A, and if you can look on the map up there, you see it's 2A, and I'll get into it. This marine area is actually the Chehalis River, which begins at U.S. Highway 101 bridge in Aberdeen. This is about 1/2 mile above the bridge that encompasses all of the salmon is swimming up the Chehalis River into a bottleneck. This allows gillnet fishing bank to bank, giving zero protection to weak stocks that must be protected for conservation purposes. I asked this area and that portion of Marine Area 2D above the mouth of the Hokum River be removed from any future state commercial fisheries and WDFW find more room fishing area within Marine Area 2D below the mouth of the Hokum River if commercial fishing is to be allowed to continue in Grays Harbor. Many of the people who spoke at the public input meetings have stated that state commercial fisheries must be removed from all of Grays Harbor. The Quinault Indian Fishery Nation has a dramatic impact on Chehalis bound stocks. This combined with the state commercial fishery is what is driving wild escapement below the escapement goals species driven. We cannot continue to fish in this fashion. Recovery cannot and will not be reached with only a maintenance plan in place. Was that 2 minutes?
Yes, your time is up.
I have more, and you have my testimony in front of you, signed.
Can you just hand it to Tammy and she'll give it to
them.
You?
You should have them.
To Tammy, yes.
She's already got them.
Yes. Thank you. Joe Superfisky? Okay, Mr. Rupert?
Yeah. Rupert? So I'm going to cover a few things. The main thing is I spoke in December, and in December there was a thing called social network that had happened. If you remember that comment that I made that you need to pay particular attention to that, this is now January 10th. It's not during Christmas, and we got a whole crew of sport fisheries behind us. So what I want to tell you is that, you know, if you need anything or this wave starts getting out of hand, it's going to get a hand really, really quick. The one thing I want to say is this whole picture that you have here, I say ban gillnets out of the whole thing. And if you look at the two things that Ron talked about regarding the allocations as well as the economic factors in this, his December values that he had was $350,000 in terms of what it cost for the gillnet fisheries. Move that to the hatcheries. The other thing was allocation, where you guys, it sounds like they fight like for the last two fish. My opinion is once you get down to 10, forget it. It goes to conservation. Conservation trumps anything else regarding one or two fish. Who cares at that point, right? Then let's talk about the economy. Ron also stated that the economy within just the Grays Harbor area in 2008 dollars, not 2014, 2008 dollars was $1.5 million. Let's say 2014, we're going to be way over $2 million, right? Now, let's say that we actually start meeting our quota and our numbers start going up. We ban the gillnets within the entire Grays Harbor area. The amount of fishermen that are going to come down to that and spend money is going to go through the roof. So as they spend money to go down there, the comments that were previous to me speaking here stating that they were going to save so many dollars, good God, the amount of jobs created by all the sports fishing coming down to the Chehalis River system, the fish, is going to be totally outweighing by this. The other item was that there was comments regarding the entire state. Don't buy into that. We're talking about Grays Harbor. We're not talking about the entire state. We're talking about Grays Harbor. So just look at the points in which Ron said Ron's values actually came from the facts and data that's what his job is and collecting that. That's what I would go by. Don't go by propaganda. Go by what Ron has stated. That's what I go by. And then the last thing is in terms of the gill netters all by themselves, There is a YouTube video out there that shows them on how they handle the fish, and I can send that to you as well. And basically what it is just grabbing. They don't use the boxes as they were trained to do. They just grab it and toss it. Anyway, I'll let it go. Thanks.
Thank you. Ross Barkhurst, please come forward. Mr. Superfisky.
Commission, Director Anderson, thanks for giving me the time to speak. At the last meeting, I asked you guys a couple real simple, poignant questions, and I'm wondering if you guys have made any leeway, headway towards them. One was the treaty fishing. The number of days that the tribe fishes compared to what we've brought up, have you guys had the conversations amongst yourself about, you know, the 3-4, 4-3 compared to 5-7 as it is now? Has anyone talked about that? Has anyone brought it up in the agency? Has anybody approached the tribes about it? I mean, this was a month ago I asked this question. Next thing I wanted to talk about was hatchery numbers. As you can see, there's a lot of sports fishermen in this room. And as being a fishery that's within 100 miles of a major metro area, the number of fish that are planted every year goes down, keeps going down. And the number of licenses that are sold and the use keeps increasing. Well, obviously this year the rubber's hit the road and you guys have a huge dilemma on your hand. I mean, what are we going to do short term to boost this? We're not making escapement. Sports fishermen are getting angry. There's not enough for everybody. I mean, what have you guys talked amongst yourselves about that point that was brought up? I mean, hatcheries are not the long-term answer, but it's a short-term fix. Has anybody thought about that? I mean, you guys all look at me with like a blank face, and it's like, you guys represent us. You're supposed, we're supposed to trust you guys and decisions that are made in the department. You know, as Ron Warren said, there's a huge trust problem. I'd say there's a giant trust problem because right now, the years that I've lived in the state my whole life, and I've fished and I've hunted and everything, and since I've been on this commission, the Grace Harbor Salmon Management Committee. I mean, there's a bunch of us volunteers that work really hard, volunteer our time, and we're not, and it's the same thing year in and year out. And the trust, I mean, people come to us and ask us questions. We tell them what you guys have told us. But you know what? It doesn't change. There isn't any change. So why should anybody in this room trust you guys? And I don't know what it's going to take for you guys to rebuild the trust, but let's start with taking care of some simple questions. Let's raise some fish. Let's talk to the tribes. And everyone wants to pick on the gill netters. Well, that's just a start. Let's pick on everybody, okay? Because, I mean, if you guys aren't even going to talk to the tribes, then how can these guys, what are you going to do? I mean, we can talk about all these policies all we want, and until you do some simple things like increase fish, it doesn't matter about the policy. Because if there isn't any fish to catch, what's the policy matter? You know, and I don't know if it's Ron on his parting shot on the way out or whatever, but what Ron said here earlier today is the first time in all these years that Ron's actually talked about conservation. And I don't know if he's under your guys' thumb or what, but I mean, why is it so hard to answer just a few simple questions and act on it? There's just no action.
Okay, thank you. I know how awkward it seems that we sit here listening, but we're not. We want you to have 3 minutes. We don't want to take up your time, and we can't be in the position of answering everyone, or it would just blow our agenda timing completely apart. So what we're doing here is we're listening to you after the public input has ended. You will hear the commission discuss these topics. And I can assure you we have been thinking and discussing lots of different aspects here. So just the fact that we don't answer right now, we don't answer questions during public input, it does not mean that we are not thinking or listening. We are. And you will hear us talking after this is all done. Jeff McCain, would you come forward, please? You, Mr. Barkhurst.
Chair Wecker, Commissioners, Director Anderson, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Ross P. Barkhurst. I'm from South Bend, Washington, and I'm a member of the Coastal Conservation Association. I'm here to testify in favor of a new Grays Harbor policy that puts conservation first and recognizes the economic and conservation advantages of the recreational fishery over non-selective commercial gillnet fisheries. I would also like to emphasize the need to get more naturally spawned chum and chinook up our Grays Harbor Basin rivers. As you know, WDFW has chronically fallen short of identified escapement goals in recent years, and improvement is needed. I do not see the detailed guidelines in this latest draft that would fix that. The term recreational priority needs formal definition in the policy. It is not enough to just say the words. Recreational policy priority must result in an increase in a meaningful opportunity in order for the fishing public to visit Grays Harbor and spend their recreational dollars fishing for salmon. At a minimum, this will require substantial, predictable closure periods for any commercial gillnetting in our rivers. It is also alarming to understand that the department spends over $250,000 administering a Grays Harbor commercial fishery, while the ex-vessel value is around $80,000. $250,000 is 10 times the license fee and excise revenue. At a time when the department is struggling to maintain programs essential to its conservation mission, we're very concerned about the message it sends and the impact it has to publicly subsidize a commercial non-selective gillnet fishery in a basin where we don't meet our goals, but we're paying for it to happen. This non-selective fishery and its overharvest, including high-release mortality, are significant contributors to management failures over the years. Based on economics, this fishery should not exist. At the very least, it should be entirely funded by the beneficiaries without subsidy and should be reformed in favor of less destructive gears.
Thank you. Alan Hollingsworth. Hey, Mr. McKean.
Greetings, Fish and Wildlife Commission Director Henderson. They would have you believe that it is no longer acceptable for the WDFW to spend $250,000 to $300,000 to manage a fleet of working gillnetters. Spend the money instead for their enjoyment. All this out of their leadership from a fire department that spends $283,000 for five fire commissioners out of a $42 million operating budget. This summer, I read an article about the Columbia River King Salmon were not big enough. The record run was not enough for the Northwest anglers. Thousands of sport fishermen in the basin, not enough sanicans, not enough dumpsters, not enough parking, not enough lanes in the boat ramps. Delay the release of king salmon. We need fish in the winter. Deer are not big enough in eastern Washington. 4-point minimum. Build the bucks up. Not enough? I've seen 8-year-olds more appreciative. I see a man behind me. He watched cable news last night, pounding his fists, forehead veins throbbing, and shouting at the TV about the lazy people not getting jobs. Them welfare bums. You, the commission, will face him and hear him with all seriousness to tell you to approve his plan to allocate the salmon that my friends and I catch and sell into the marketplace to his friends to catch for fun. He is retired and I am not. I looked at the available jobs in Aberdeen, Starbucks, GNC, Comcast, and that's not enough to support a family. His job proposal is he eats the whole blackberry pie and I can wash the plate. I have nothing against firemen. I'm sure it takes more than a paycheck to get out of bed and to see what happens when bad things happen to people. But when you want to come here and beat up my friends and we're arguing over 5% of the real run of fish, I'll say something about that. I should be able to choose my occupation, and we all should choose what makes us happy. It doesn't have to be all one way. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Jack Hollingsworth. Hey, Mr. Hollingsworth.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Commission members. The first thing I'd like to say, I was kind of disappointed in Ron's presentation. I figured he'd have some kind of three proposals how to divide the fish up. I didn't hear any. The gillnetters sent in a proposal for Chehalis and the hump tulips fisheries. I think you should consider them very, very can't think of the word, but anyway, really consider them because I think they're actually fair proposals. In setting Grays Harbor policy, the commission should go by the legislative mandates provided them on in the RCWs, follow the WDFW Mission Director Performance Agreement you have signed, follow the Bolt decision and all federal court decisions. And at some place, and I looked yesterday till my eyes went haywire, that someplace in there, I read one time that no user group is supposed to take the brunt of the conservation in any of the Bolt decision area. The recreational fishery, basically in that area 2D, came after the Bolt decision, and actually I think it's an illegal fishery because it was an added fishery rather than taken away from the other two fisheries that was already there, the river sport and the commercial. And I heard the other day that the commission was going to cut way back on Grays Harbor commercial fishing and add to Willapa in its place. Well, I don't think that's right because Willapa Bay now we're maximizing what we have, and a lot of gillnetters from Grays Harbor does not have a Willapa Bay license. Is this true? And under the general purposes, number 7, last month, Ron Warren said that it did not exclude any commercial fishing. It just, that was all user groups was within it. If the commercials are cut back or eliminated, the hatchery should be cut back appropriately. And yesterday, I heard on KXRO News, I don't know if this was a news release or not from the department, that this was an anti-gillnet meeting. Did the department put out to ban gillnetting in Grays Harbor? Did the department put out that news release? That was on the news yesterday. Alternative fishing methods of harvest in Grays Harbor, you're talking at least $500,000 to buy a purse seine boat, and I don't know what the nets cost, so that's pretty prohibitive. And in the last 2 or 3 years, the only escapement goals that has not been made in Grays Harbor has been the Chinook run. The Chum is coming back. Coho has made it for several years. So when they say we haven't made escapement goal, I think they're just referring to Chinook and they're saying all salmon. Thank you very much.
Thank you. David Hollingsworth? Okay. Mr. Hollingsworth?
Good morning, commissioners. I'd like to emphasize just a few points that some of my fishing partners have made. And one is that legislature acknowledges that commercial fishing is important in the state, and it is important to preserve this industry. The commission and the director has a duty from the legislature to assess and maintain the commercial fishing industry statewide, which includes Grays Harbor. There's been a lot of talk this morning about conservation. Well, conservation of the resource is a responsibility of all user groups, not the elimination of one group to the benefit the other. And there's been a lot of talk about this 3-day-a-week ban on nets in the Chehalis. And the allocation of Chinook that the sports have wanted to give the gillnet fleet, it pretty much eliminates us. If there's a good run of coho, the tribes fish 3-4 days a week, I guess that leaves us out. So what do we do with those fish 3 days a week that's going to be saved out of our gillnets? There's no plan. Is the spawning area going to be closed so those fish that do get by are saved for conservation? No. They want them to go on the end of a sport pole. That's the only reason they want the 3 days a week gillnet ban. In 2013, we had probably the most observed fishery on Grays Harbor we've ever had. The first day, we had an observer on every boat. 200 drifts were observed. 63 unmarked Chinook were observed caught and released. There was a few drifts left. Some of the observers were gone before our period was over, and they estimated 67 were intercepted on that one day. The next period, they had, I think, four observers on the boats. They observed 70-some drifts. Four unmarked Chinook were observed. The last 4 days that we fished in November, zero Chinook, unmarked Chinook were observed in that fishery. Approximately 6,000 coho were harvested in the periods that we got in the Chehalis. To me, that's a pretty successful fishery. We need stability in the management plan for Grays Harbor, but we also need flexibility. Predictions rarely come in right on target. Fishery science needs to be the tools we use to manage our Grays Harbor fisheries, not public opinion. Thank you.
Thank you. Robert Rao. Mr. Hollingsworth, go ahead.
My name is David Hollingsworth, commercial fisherman. In an attempt to adopt the management policy for Grays Harbor, there's a small group of sport fishers that want to eliminate the non-treaty commercial fishery in Grays Harbor by a management scheme of public opinion rather than fishery science. The voters of Washington State have voted this management scheme down twice. Anti-gillnet initiatives have been ran twice in this state and both failed. And the voters of Oregon last November also voted this down. The participants value this fishery as a part of the statewide fishing industry. Eliminating this fishery will not only affect the participants, but the economic effect will be felt by the processors, the lost revenue, and employees, local businesses, and the non-fishing consumers whose tax money will also contribute to the Washington Fish and Wildlife budget. Having potentially losing the mainstream Columbia, losing another fishery will only create more congestion in other areas. We urge you to carefully consider your decision. A fair distribution of this resource must be achieved by fishery science, not public opinion. Both sport and commercial fisheries hold an important position in the conservation and harvest available for salmon of Grays Harbor. Thank you.
Thank you. Melanie Rabaglia. Okay, Mr. Raff.
Yes, I've spoken before you many times. You know my opinions well. I want to address three or four things as quickly as possible. The primary one here is that the previous comments about a three-day off and four-day on has been talked about as though we expect the gillnetters to take all of the brunt of that. That's not accurate at all. That's one of the many misconceptions being pushed forward by the commercial people today. Actually, most of the people pushing that policy are more than happy to see all of us off the river during that time frame, not just them. And as a matter of fact, more than half of us are willing to give up the fishery entirely for a five-year period, as one of the other people said about how successful that policy was on the Wainuchi. We're willing to give up those fish, as was done in the 80s on a coastwide ban on salmon fishing, which resulted in a lot of fish being available again. Now, we may not be able to do anything about the northern interceptions, although I really expect you to address that issue and find out how we can get more of our fish down here, because it's obviously non-equitable. But the other issue that's not really being addressed here is the lack of the state's response to monitoring of tribal fisheries. All we have to go by is the tribe's word on what they get and what is left. And the reality is that they are not responsible stewards of this particular resource. We've seen that time and time again. Their netting schedule this year, including days, to make up for days they couldn't fish last year. Now, how the hell does that work when you look at a stock from 1 year to the next year? That's positively insane. But obviously, their attitude is, we've been screwed over for so many years by white people. Now it's our turn to fish to the last fish. Now, that's not all of their policy, but the people that are making money on this are the same people people that are in the canneries down in South Bend that get a lot of their fish from the Columbia, which is phasing out gill nets. Get a clue as to what's really going on. People don't like them. They talk about failed initiatives, but eventually initiatives succeed. And by that point, it may be too late because the resource will be gone. I'm willing to give up fishing for salmon in Grays Harbor to bring this resource back. The commercial people are not willing to do that. Not one of them has come forward and said, we're willing to give this a break for a few years. I think that that motivation is a primary source of what's going on with our salmon in Grays Harbor. It's greed, plain and simple. No matter how many people are hired by a cannery down there, they still get most of their fish from the Columbia, and they've got record amounts of fish coming into the Columbia at this point. There's fish coming in from Alaska and Canada. We're buying our own fish back from those fisheries. We don't need commercial people to feed the people in Grays Harbor or in the state. The Indians and the northern interception rates are doing all that quite well, thank you.
Thank you. Troy? Please, no applause, please. Troy Ellis? Okay, Ms. Rubaglia?
Great. A few weeks ago, Vice Chair Brad Smith cautioned us regarding the economic argument. The Commission's focus is on science and conservation. Additionally, an advisory commission member representing the gillnet commercial interests keeps saying science, not public opinion. I've heard that many times here tonight. So, let's keep science. We keep science. I hear you. I'm here today to talk about the fish and the science. These fish, the ones that are being fished into extinction. The science that you've been trying is not working. Escapement goals consistently have not been met. This is a fact, not public opinion. The way the fishery is run is not working. Let's stop this madness, conserve the resource, manage the fishery. Fish counts and economic numbers do not support the skill net allotments. Stop beating a dead horse, or should I say a fish. We don't gillnet fish in Puget Sound anymore. Somebody came to their senses. We don't gillnet fish in Columbia River anymore. Somebody came to their senses. You could require better nets and procedures. No fishing without monitors. Limit the number of consecutive days nets are in the river. You could limit number of the days the rec guys have there in the river. You could ban them too. Policy advisory meetings always keep getting stuck in the same place. Everybody wants the limited number of fish. The fish here in Grays Harbor will never have a chance if we keep talking about tiers and sidebars. Just stop the gillnet fishery, like in Puget Sound, like in the Columbia River. I speak for the fish. Do the right thing. Help them. Help staff. Give them direction. They're asking you for direction and to help them with their policy. The first thing is come forward. Help the fish. Stop the gillnet fishery. If you want to stop our fishery too, that's great. We're willing to do it. I don't hear them putting it up like we're willing to put it up. You know, I'll be the first person to say, I'll stop fishing if it'll make a difference. I haven't heard that. I've been reasonable every time I've come in here and supported three days on, you know, and done that. But they're never reasonable. So today, I'll be unreasonable too. No gillnet fishing. No gillnet fishing, no fishing for anybody. You know, let's save this. Is this all I'm going to be end up with? Is something stuffed to throw around and go, here, you want to catch a fish? This is how you catch one? Like at the Pike Place Market, $400 for a fish. Get real. You know, unbelievable. I mean, they talk about having $20 a pound for the fish that come out of Alaska, you know, and it's like, oh, yeah, sure, maybe that. But our fish, $400 a pound. Last year I caught 4 fish total, you know, and 2 of them were jacks. Oh, yeah, I'm going to be eating that forever. You know, and I support these guys. I go out and I buy crab from these same fishermen who go out and rape these guys. Save our fish. Thank you.
Dwayne. So you guys are just going to be unruly?
Yeah.
Well, please. I mean, give everyone some respect. Give the commission some respect. We're going to get through this, and we're going to talk. So please, bear with me. Behave yourself.
It's not being unruly.
It's not.
Okay, Dwayne England, would you please come forward? Hey, Mr. Els.
I would like to remind you guys that it's not sports commercial resource, it's a public resource. The people of the state of Washington. When 5%, less than 5% of the people in the state buy a fishing license, they want everything. I don't think that's right. But anyway, like I say, I want you to remember it's not a people's resource, not sports or not commercial. The commercial, whether it's a troller, seiner, gill netter, reef netter, we're fishing for the people. We're employed by the people just like you guys are. We're fishing for the people in the state of Washington, so that's it.
Okay, thank you. Francis Estelida. Hey, Mr. England.
Good morning, once again, Chair Wecker, Director Anderson, and Commission staff. I appreciate the time once again to speak before you. I actually prepared some information, but I've been sitting here this morning just listening to the input, and I think we can all agree that the amount of people in this room is somewhat impressive. If it sends no other message, it sends a message of sports fisher persons, try to delete the fisherman, but fisher persons united, showing a sign of solidarity, and really taking time to finally get somewhat educated on the issues, okay? I've been on the Citizens Advisory Committee for 10 years. I had the benefits of knowing Director Anderson quite well and working with Ron Warren and staff, and it pleased me this morning to see that Ron listed two things on the top of his initial presentation, conservation and not fishing down to the last fish. I think we had that discussion last time we were here, because that's been the mentality. Those two key elements right there will never be achieved if we don't change the philosophy in how we target our fish. It's the responsibility of all user groups to change the ways and the methods of how we fish. Conservation isn't even on the register if we don't look at how we approach our fisheries. Gill netting is non-selective. I believe we can all agree on that. I look at this panel before me. You are all very educated individuals. Much higher education than I ever had the willingness to seek out. Call me lazy, I guess. But the facts are, we know that change is needed, okay? We know that the methods of how we target our fish are not acceptable if we're to truly embrace the terminology of conservation. It doesn't work. It's an oxymoron. I've heard all kinds of support for those who make their livelihood gill netting or commercial fishing. Yeah, I'm wearing a shirt that says ban gill nets. It doesn't say ban commercial fishing. It doesn't say ban tribal fishing. We recognize the treaty rights. The 74 Bull decision is in stone. You're not going to take that away. But there is room for adjustment. There is room to look at the numbers. There is room to look at it and say, yeah, there is over harvest going on. There's a blatant disregard for the resource at times. If you have a pen and paper, write down Sportsmen for Change. Social media is dynamic. Go to Facebook. Look at the page Sportsmen for Change. You're going to see simply pictures and photos and videos that sports fishermen and women have found as they're out walking their favorite rivers, spending a day on the water. You're looking at discarded fish, thousands, because there's no buyer. Unacceptable use of the resource. You're looking at abandoned nets in the river killing native steelhead, and nobody's held accountable. Absolutely unacceptable. Blatant disregard for the resource. Gill nets are non-discriminant, we can all agree to that. Again, I'm not saying ban commercial fishing, I'm not saying ban tribal fishing. What I'm saying is go selective. Get the Quinaults back to the table and decide what it's going to take to be conservative and get our escapement numbers back to where they need to be. Thank you.
Thank you. Andy Mitbeat. Okay, Mr. Estelida.
Good morning, Chair Wecker, Commissioners. Francis Estelila, advisor on the Great Harbor Salmon Committee, and been working with the group for upwards of a decade now, since its inception. I think you've heard one word resonate today all morning long. It's conservation. Conservation, conservation, conservation. Chronic failure to meet conservation goals, and what can we do about it? What can we do to be more accountable? What can we do to look back at our record, our track record, and see what can we do to prevent repeating of those failures? Okay, we hear science versus public opinion driving this. Science drives your conservation. Okay? And simply, we've been fishing the stocks too hard that we're not making our conservation goal. The second thing you've heard a lot today is allocation. Allocation, allocation. It's always part of these difficult decisions. You know, that's your job. Policy drives allocation. You know, science, that comes from your staff people. They should provide you with the data. They should be monitoring this stuff, enforcing this stuff, and coming back to you and say, hey, this is how we're doing. Tell us how we should proceed from here. That's your job. Okay? Policy drives allocation. And overarching all of this is this economics argument. We've heard that, you know, this is supposed to be all about science, but policy is driven by economics. It's an unavoidable reality of making these types of policy decisions. We've been at this process for a few months. Chair Wecker talked about the awkwardness of the silence as we all spill our guts before you. There's a lot of passion in the room. Everybody has an opinion, but we haven't heard you guys deliberate yet, and we really look forward to that after several months of this. Take all the comment that's been put on the table and set before you over the months, and especially today. We want to hear how you feel about that stuff, and we just really look forward to that, and we wish you well on making some good, sound conservation decisions. Thank you.
Thank you. Lael Johnson. Hey, Mr. Mepi.
Commissioners, WFW staff, here we go, conservation again. If your efforts are really truly in conservation, you don't start at the bottom. Okay, you don't start with a commercial fisherman 1%. Okay, recreational is at 4%. I did not get what the tribal was. But you're 48% in the northern fisheries. Maybe we should start there. Okay, you're not going to save anything starting at the bottom. Okay, we heard some comments on 2A that the gill nets go bank to bank. That's not true. Okay, there are pilings there. There are docks there. Not possible. If you watch the recreational fishery going on, well, the gill netting is going on. They are very successful. It's a fact. You see all these people in the room. That's great. You know, they're here to support what they believe. I do believe, though, there's less than 1% of the people here with a recreational card. Just scanning the room, I can see that we have 15 to 20% representing the commercial side. Let's stick with the jobs we have and not try and create the other ones. Okay, the jobs we have are great jobs. Commercial fishing. Thank you.
Thank you. Terry Turner, would you come forward? Mr. Johnson?
I'm here to represent a first-year guide. I am this year. Over the past couple of years, I have fell in love with Washington. I'm not from here. I'm from Kansas. And seeing all of the wonderful fishing and opportunities we can have in the outdoors has led me to make this my home. I don't think of Kansas as my home anymore. This is my home. I had a situation earlier this year when I went out with another one of my fishing guide buddies, and we had an awesome 2 days of fishing, Friday and a Saturday. Took a break, which I kill myself about every day. I didn't fish that Sunday, and I went back on Monday, and there were nets in the river. I thought there were trees being cut down. It wasn't trees. It wasn't chainsaws I was listening to. It was sleds in the river, wiping the river, raping the river. So at the end of our float, I talked to the park ranger, and we're like, man, what happened? You know, like, it was amazing. I mean, many, many people have seen. There's the people that were in the room that were actually out there that day. It was so good, and they came out and fished with us, and I asked the park ranger, I was like, what's going on? I was like, I didn't know they could do this. I'm like, I'm on the river, I'm fishing. They're netting and raping this river as it's going on. And I got the answer, it's above my pay grade. I'm tired of hearing that. I don't want to hear that anymore. I want somebody to have an actual answer to help me, myself, and the other people in this room so we can actually have some actual management over this stuff that's going on. It's just, my opportunity is being taken away from me before I even get a real chance to try. And I don't like that. It really upsets me. And I don't know what to do. My hands are kind of tied, and it really, really upsets me. And I love this. And I'm trying to bring other people into this sport, as a lot of other people in this room are doing it also. And we're not getting anywhere. This is being taken away. I'm a very avid fisherman and photographer. And just to see, you know, my records, like, it's just, it's there, and it's just going. And it's being taken and taken and taken and taken. And I don't want to hear that answer. It's above my pay grade by someone who's supposed to be policing that area. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Turner, you're the last one.
Is this on?
Yes, it is.
My name's Trey Turner. Excuse me. I live here in Olympia, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify today. I only have four main points here. One is I feel and have felt this for a long time, the escapement goals are way too low and for steelhead and salmon, not just for the Grays Harbor area, but really throughout the state. The second point, I don't see a 50-50 allocation, according to the Judge Bolt. It's just not happening. And we have not had, a third point, we have not had a retention of Chinook and Chum on Chehalis, Wenatchee, and Satsup for years. And the main point that I really want to stress, and you've heard it before, the emphasis really needs to be on conservation and restoration of wild fish. If we lose our wild fish, we're going to lose everything. We all know that hatchery fish are poor spawners and survivors. However, without hatchery fish, we wouldn't be fishing. And it is a real problem, as you know, if we get hatchery fish onto the spawning beds, because obviously hatchery fish need to be caught. And I'm not against the tribes fishing. They have a right to do that. But I sure don't see a 50-50 situation for the recreational fisher. And the commercials have a right, but I felt that the nets from both tribal and commercial have been really too much for these fish to survive in this watershed. And we really need to put the emphasis on conservation. And as you all know, the wild fish are much better spawners and survivors. And at the same time, if we didn't have hatchery fish, we wouldn't be fishing. I understand that. But we need to have a balance. I don't see a balance in the management of this fishery. And I guess that's my main point. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all. Very good testimony. I appreciate it. I think the commission needs a break. At least I do, for 10 minutes. And then we will come back and you will be hearing us. We've got lots of things to discuss, so please stay around, but we do need a 10-minute break, so that means come back at a little after 20 after. Taking your seat. Now it's our turn. I know that you've been waiting to hear what the commissioners think about what you've said and the information that we've been provided by staff over the recent several months. So now it's our time. And I know that our commission fish committee has been hard at work. They've been meeting, I think, two or three times each commission meeting that we've had, been putting in lots and lots of hours thinking about this. So I'm going to turn it over to the chair of our Fish Committee, Conrad Mankin. and he's going to present the recommendations of, he and his colleagues will present the recommendations of the Fish Committee. Commissioner Mencken?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. It's very difficult to sit here and listen to testimony asking us questions and not being able to answer. Sometimes it gets very frustrating, but hopefully what you're about to hear will answer at least some of those questions. The Fish Committee of the Commission has completed a preliminary review of the December 3rd, 2013 draft Grays Harbor Salmon Management Policy. We've also looked at briefing material that was provided by the department, the staff, and through extensive public comments. Your comments have been heard. This review has resulted in the proposed addition of five new recommended policy statements added to the draft policy. Following presentation of these additions, we will ask the full commission for their concurrence and their comments, and then the Fish Committee, which is, by the way, comprised of Bob Kehoe, Larry Carpenter, and Raleigh Schmitten, and myself, we will be giving the presentation for you as we go through this. If these recommendations are accepted by the commission, then the new expanded draft policy will be available for public comment. So at this time, I think we'll start off with Commissioner Schmitten, if you will, please.
Dr. Mencken is asked that I provide you an introduction, that I note the many complexities that we learned about your fishery, and also identify the three areas that our Fish Committee's recommendations fall under for the management of Grays Harbor fishery. Since we're not an expert on the Grays Harbor fishery, in fact, at best, there's probably been a couple people here on the table has fished there. I was a gillnet observer once down there. I fished once as a recreational fisherman. We do appreciate your comments. If you wonder if we ever get all those cards and letters and emails, we do. I, for one, and I know my colleagues do, we read all of them that you've sent. We try to listen as closely as we can. We're attentive. We don't interrupt during the testimony. And further, as was indicated, the Fish Committee has met multiple times. I think we're up to five times on the issue. And it is time that we have a chance to share our thoughts with you, and appreciate that. You know, as a commission, the last few years, we've dealt with a lot of conservation and allocation issues, some in very complex fisheries. Probably the most recent example would be Columbia River salmon fishery, where we dealt with 19 endangered salmon listed species. We dealt with upriver, downriver fisheries components. We dealt with four recognized tribes, plus on the north end of the Columbia, the Confederated Tribe, Colville Tribe. We dealt with three states. We dealt with a plethora of hatcheries, but frankly, having been through that, I'm astonished with the complexity of the Grays Harbor fishery and what coincides the management then of that fishery. I'm especially surprised at the number of constraints that are applied to the fishery, and Ron Warren led through that, and I'm going to actually touch on a few of those because I think it's so significant. Because the result is that there is a very small portion of those fisheries that are actually under current management. The constraints are taken off the top. Let me give an example. And this is similar to what Ron did. First of all, I'll use Chehalis Falls Chinook. That's one of three stocks that we've identified as what we call conservation stocks. And what that means is that they have not met their escapement goals three out of the past 5 years. And an accounting who takes those fish, I was stunned when I saw that U.S. Canada, Southeast Alaska, 30%, Vancouver Island, Canada, 18%, 48%, in what Ron didn't say, I know I've heard before, but, you know, in years of low productivity, that may mean that all adult fish in excess of spawning goals have been harvested before the fish get in the mouth of the Grace Harbor estuary. All of them. Now, let's add to that Cornwall Indian Nation. It's a federally recognized tribe established under U.S. v. Washington, the Bolt decision. They have the right of up to 50% of returning adult fish. They haven't taken that, but if you have took... Recall, you got 48% off the top, U.S. Canada. You took the balance of 52%. Half of that would go should have gone to the tribes, and they don't take that much. But that would put you over 70% at that point. Continue. Chehalis tribe. They were given through a lawsuit, the United States, Chehalis et al., versus the state of Washington, fish allocation. It's unknown exactly. It could be somewhere between 1 and 6% how much they actually take. The amazing thing, it is off of the non-treaty sector. So kind of getting to a bottom line is, my eyebrows just raised, the balance of 5% for non-treaty net and sports fishermen, that is simply amazing. And that's built, by the way, on 2001 through 5 rude years. There's a couple other constraints. I've heard it mentioned today, but you know there's a very modest hatchery supplementation in the basin. Primarily, the two significant ones are the cohos, are both Chehalis and Hump Tulips. And there's a sizable amount of uncertainty in the pre-season abundance setting. And that's why in-season ability to adjust is really important. So as a committee, we had to figure out how we're going to proceed, where we're going to go. And there's a common thread that you wove through the three public hearings that we've heard you talk about. We've also heard from the staff. And that thread is conservation. And that thread is woven by both you, the commercial, and you, the recreational fishermen. That conservation is paramount. We must meet escapement goals. And I've kind of kept tally. The first time I have a rough figure, that was a third of you raised it. Last public hearing, I counted closely. 20 people testified, 12 raised conservation and meeting escapement goals. And today, out of 22, 10. So I just read you. Again, I got this a couple days ago. It doesn't matter whether it was recreational or commercial. What it says is, I think, what matters. Chair Wecker wished to thank the commission for their service and dedication to the conservation of salmon and Grace Harbor fisheries. But here's the important point. Please consider the following subjects regarding this matter with the highest of priority. First, escapement. We must meet escapement goals each and every year. This is imperative to the survival of the fish that swim and spawn in these waters. Any type or length of fishery should always be secondary. I'm well aware that this could mean on lean years that we do not have a directed fishery by anyone, and if that's what it takes, then so be it. So that is what guided our committees. It was our foundation. It's where we wanted to go. Against this backdrop of complexity, We worked with the department staff. We've built a series of five recommendations we want to walk you through to clarify, refine, and enhance the key elements of the policy. And there's, really, this is all about the policy we're giving guidance to. And so the three areas that we focused on, number one, and that was strengthened conservation guidance. Number two, support proposals to reduce gear conflict. And number three, refine options for sharing between recreational and commercial fisheries. So, Chairman, I'll turn it back to you to go through the recommendations.
Okay, we will kind of tag team the recommendations. I'm up first. A stated purpose of the draft policy is to, quote, advance conservation and restoration of wild salmon, unquote. The December draft policy includes multiple principles directed at achieving this purpose. In addition, each species-specific section states that, quote, fisheries will be managed with the intent of achieving escapement goals, unquote. And we recommend the following additions to strengthen the conservation element of the draft policy. Recommendation number one, the Fish Committee recommends lending policy support to the department's efforts to separately manage Chinook and coho salmon returns to the Hump Tulips and Chehalis River. We suggest that adding the following language to the guiding principle as follows, quote, the department shall seek agreement with the Quinault Indian Nation to manage fisheries with the intent to meet the Chinook and coho salmon spawning goals for the Hump Tulips River and the Chinook and coho spawning goals for the Chehalis River, unquote. We are absolutely convinced that without the concurrence of the co-managers and without mutual cooperation, it will be an extremely difficult task. Bob.
Thank you, Chairman Mankin. Before I go into the Fish Committee's second recommendation, I did want to add a couple things. As you heard, the Fish Committee spent quite a bit of time looking at this. We've met several times, and I have, as Commissioner Schmitten said, reviewed every email that's gone in and reviewed the comments carefully, listened to the testimony here today. And we've debated the issue amongst the Fish Committee. Some issues we've had lively discussions and debates. On conservation, however, we've had no debate, and I think just to make sure that I get it right, I'm going to read the recommendation and the rationale and the basis for it. So, bear with me. The Fish Committee recommends including in the draft policy a provision to institute precautionary management measures when spawner goals are not achieved. We recognize that improving the status of the Chehalis Fall Chinook in particular will be challenging. We also recognize that we cannot anticipate all factors that will affect the number of salmon spawners in the Grays Harbor in future years, and that adaptive management will be essential to achieve our conservation objectives. We recognize that these measures will likely result in reduced fishing opportunities while the abundance of these fish is restored. We recommend adding the following language to the adaptive management section of the draft policy. And this is the recommendation, and I will quote it. As a component of the annual fishery management review, the department shall assess if spawner goals were achieved for Chehalis Spring Chinook Chehalis Fall Chinook, Hump Tulips Fall Chinook, Chehalis Coho, Hump Tulips Coho, and Grays Harbor Chum Salmon. If the number of natural origin spawners was less than the goal in 3 out of the last 5 years, beginning in 2008, the department shall implement the following measures. First, the predicted fishery impact for that stock in WDFW managed fisheries in the Grays Harbor Basin will not exceed 5% of the adult return. And secondly, if a spawner goal for fall Chinook salmon is not achieved, the Grays Harbor control zone off of the mouth of the Grays Harbor will be implemented no later than the second Monday in August and continue until the end of September. And that's the second recommendation of the Fish Committee on Conservation. End quote.
Chair, under the heading of promote orderly fisheries, reduce cure conflict, and achieve sharing objectives, recommendation 3 follows. The Fish Committee recommends the addition of the following guidance to the guiding principle 8 to promote orderly fisheries, reduce cure conflict, and achieve sharing objectives. And I quote for the record, Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife managed commercial gillnet fisheries in fishing areas or aggregated areas, for example, areas 2A, 2B, 2D, areas 2C, shall be scheduled, if possible, so that any given calendar week there are a minimum of 3 consecutive days when no treaty or state-managed commercial fishery occurs, end of quote.
Thank you, Chairman Mencken. I'd like to say a couple things in advance of my recommendation. I want to appreciate the participation of the public in this. The letters and emails and text messages and things that we get are really, really important. And like other my colleagues said, we do read them. Sometimes it takes a long time to get through them, but it is appreciated. Second item is I just want to acknowledge that the effort that this group of 4 has put forward, not only have we met any number of times, we've had several conference calls, and these other 3 guys that I work with are just gems to work with. They're dedicated, knowledgeable, and put forth a lot of energy to try and make the right decision in all cases. Lastly, I want to thank the staff for helping and guiding us through this process with the scientific data that we need to try and make rational decisions. The Fish Committee recommendations. We recommend, this is number 4, in consideration of the conservation concerns for Chehalis Fall Chinook salmon, the ability of the recreational fishery to release wild Chinook with minimal mortality, and the importance of the recreational fishing industries to the state's economy, the Fish Committee recommends that the policy prioritize the use of available fishery impacts for fall Chinook for the recreational fishery. The priority is consistent with existing policy direction provided by the Commission for Puget Sound and Columbia River fisheries. We suggest adding the following language to the policy draft, and I quote, the fishery management objectives for fall Chinook salmon in priority order are to 1, achieve spawner goals, 2, provide meaningful recreational fishing opportunities, and 3, limit commercial fishery impacts to the incidental harvest of fall Chinook during fisheries directed at other species, end quote.
Final recommendation comes under the heading of refined sharing options, and it's recommendation 5. The Fish Committee recommends returning the impact rates of the commercial fishery to the levels prior to the implementation of the revised management framework in 2009. We suggest replacing the commercial recreational sharing tables in the draft policy with the following language. Quote, WDFW managed commercial fisheries in Grays Harbor Basin shall have the following impact limits. Areas 2A, 2B, 2D, impact rates of less than 0.8% on Chehalis Falls Chinook. Area C, impact rates of less than 1.2% on Hump Tulip Falls Chinooks. Chair, a little explanation, what does that mean? And although commercial impacts are relatively small, for instance, the average encounter was 236 Chehalis Falls Chinook from 2002 to 2008, but that increased to an average 527 from 2009 to 2012. That happens to coincide with the same timing that we missed 3 out of 5 years of meeting our escapement. It's not... Chair, I'll stop with that.
Thank you.
Okay. So those are our recommendations to date, and I'd like to close with a statement. You've heard our recommendations to, number one, strengthen conservation guidance, number two, to reduce gear conflict, number three, refine sharing options between our non-tribal recreational and commercial fisheries. But have we gone far enough? Will we be able to say that we can now rest assured that these valuable stocks of Grays Harbor salmon will now consistently meet escapement goals, flourish, and still provide us with a fishable surplus? Have we put to rest the uncertainties of managing a complex fishery with 4 competing user groups and still allow adequate escapement of the diverse Chinook, Coho, and Chum salmon stocks? My sense is probably not. We've made a good start, but beyond 2014, we'll need to do more. A more detailed, longer time perspective is needed beyond 2014 to address some of the unresolved management uncertainties following adoption of this policy. Some of the concepts that have been discussed for long-term resolution of Grays Harbor would affect Willapa Bay. We would need to invoke Willapa stakeholders in considering any of those concepts. In any event, I would urge the Commission and the Department to initiate a process to explore fishery management alternatives that would stabilize and benefit the fisheries of Grays Harbor. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Fish Committee, for your hard work. I don't think that you mentioned it, but the document titled Preliminary Fish Committee Comments, dated January 11th, 2014, is in the public record now. It's been shared with the full commission, so it will be available to everyone, and it contains a lot of the detailed background, the rationale for what you've just heard. So now it's time for the rest of the...
Madam Chair, just one point of clarification.
Sure.
This document will eventually end up in the public for public comment. But at this point, we need to go back and make certain that everything is in perfect order prior to that. We're hopeful that within the next few days that we'll be able to get to that point. I see the director is...
Yeah. Dr. Anderson.
Yeah, thanks. Just from a process perspective, obviously the next item for the commission to consider is the Fish Committee's 5 recommendations and whether or not to incorporate those into the draft policy. I believe Commissioner Mankin's discussion about what happens over the next 2 or 3 days would be if the commission approves adding those elements to the draft policy. We would do that, and then we would post the revised policy on the website and make it available for public comment. So the public comment will be on the draft policy document, not on the Fish Committee's report.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
That's right.
Thank you for that clarification. So the rest of the commission has now got the opportunity to ask questions of the Fish Committee, explore the concepts, the recommendations. Commissioner Smith?
Thank you, and I share my appreciation to all of you for your dedication and heartfelt concern for a valuable resource that we all share. One phrase that surfaced in the last meeting that stuck with me, and it resonated very positively, and I just wanted to see how this is incorporated within the draft recommendations, is the phrase conservation allotment or conservation allowance. That coupled with the phrasing that we managed to the last fish, those two stuck with me as very poignant, valid questions that I think that we have looked at, and I just wanted to see those two concepts of conservation allowance and management to the last fish. Did the Fish Committee feel that those two were kind of embedded in some of the philosophy of what you were looking at?
I hope I haven't misunderstood, but I think what we've brought forward is just the reverse of that, that conservation is now paramount.
Yeah.
Escapement is going to come off the top. We're going to, our management plans, our harvest activities will reflect that, but it is putting conservation forward.
It's flipping it, yeah. Thank you. Yeah, that's what I thought.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, we all appreciate you being here and hearing your comments. It means a lot. I have a question for the committee on item 5. Could you explain a little more about the impact numbers, the 0.8 and the 1.2? I just want to see if I have my head around what that means. Thank you, Andrew.
I'll just read from the report. Let me see if I'm missing anything. Department staff have presented an analysis of the encounter rates and harvest rates of commercial fisheries on Fall Chinook during the fisheries directed at coho salmon. Since the implementation of the revised management framework in 2009, the impact rate of commercial fishing on Chehalis Fall Chinook has increased relative to the period from 2002 to 2008. Fall Chinook encounters increased by 142% in areas 2A, 2B, 2D, and mortality rates increased by 113%. Although the commercial impacts are relatively small, average encounters of 236 fish from the 2002 to 2008 period increased to an average of 527 from 2009 to 2012. Based on that information, then the Fish Committee recommended that the impact rates of the commercial fishery return to those lower rates, especially on Fall Chinook, Chehalis Fall Chinook.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions about the recommendations of the Fish Committee? Can we talk a little bit about your proposal for a Grays Harbor control zone? I'm not sure that I understand what the concept there. Director Anderson?
Thanks, Madam Chair. The Grays Harbor control zone is an area that extends from the lighthouse, which is about a mile south of the South Jetty at the mouth of Grays Harbor. It extends out to Buoy 2, which is just inside the 3-mile line, and then from there up to Buoy 3, which is the westernmost buoy marking the north side of the entrance, and then from there back to the tip of the South Jetty. We've got a number of different places up and down the coast where we've also got a Columbia River control zone. And so the idea here was, when we have, as especially when we have anchovies and other types of forage fish that are in that area, and we have concentrations of Chinook, and we're at a time frame when we know we have Grace Harbor fish that are bound for home, that we want to keep that area closed to both sport and commercial fishing, so that they get congregated as they come in there, and we don't want to have a focused, concentrated fishery on those returning Chinook salmon. And so that this and the timing of it, as you can see, it says no later than, so it might be earlier, depending on the particular status of the stock. But that's the idea of the Grace Harbor Control Zone.
Okay, Fish Committee, did you consider buffers? We've used buffers as a tool for assuring escapement in the past. What was the thinking?
Chair, we did. We looked at many alternatives, and one, because we're familiar with buffers in the Columbia River and our management of that area, it was determined it would take so long and the buffer would be so large to make progress that the approach that we took is a better approach. And we considered starting at 15, and it could have went to 40 or 50, and it, simply that was not going to work.
Okay. I also have some questions for you. We heard some testimony that some of the management uncertainties have had to do with working with our treaty co-managers and as well as the Chehalis tribe. Did you have conversations about how we might more effectively cooperate with the treaty tribe as well as the Chehalis tribe?
We discussed it at great length, but what we're doing here is we're giving guidance to the department to follow up on those recommendations. Mm-hmm.
I know this is a difficult topic to talk about, but people are very interested, particularly in relation to the Chehalis tribe's share, which comes out of the non-treaty share. Director Anderson, do you want to shed any light on the conversations that we've had, the efforts that we've gone to?
Yeah, I agree it's a difficult topic. I don't know that it's a difficult topic to talk about. We have a long standing co-management relation with the Quinault Indian Nation. We've certainly had our struggles in reaching agreement on annual management plans having to do with Grays Harbor. The escapement goal for Chehalis River Chinook as well as Hump Tulips is a topic that's been under review by both entities in a cooperative way. We've had requests from Pacific Salmon Commission, from the Chinook Technical Committee, for us to do a spawner recruit-based escapement goal for Grace Harbor. So there's certainly been work done in that vein, so we'll continue that. We have work to look at managing the stocks in isolation of each other rather than aggregating them from a spawning escapement perspective, and we'll continue that work. I think with the Chehalis tribe, I've met with the tribal chair, I've met with their natural resource manager, we've had almost annual discussions about data sharing. We have several different issues that we've been grappling with that both include both fisheries as well as hunting activities, harvest reporting, licensing, jurisdictional issues. So we're going to keep working those issues to the best of our ability, looking for ways to find success to ensure that we have that we can bring all the data, all the fishery-related mortalities to bear and have an understanding of where those occur and continue to try to build a co-management relationship with the Chehalis tribe where we have preseason agreements on harvest levels.
Thank you. We have a task at hand, and I also feel the need to express some appreciation for the hard work of our staff. Ron Warren and Jim Scott have worked with the Fish Committee as well as the director. They've been working with every meeting of the Fish Committee. They've been there providing support for our policymaking here. So I hope you do appreciate that they are honest, good people who have the resources in mind. We want to rebuild trust. We want to carry out, we want to start fresh and have a process that leads to a decision that people feel we've made with a lot of thought, a lot of effort, a lot of compassion for everyone, respect for everyone. So I think that that has been our process. I think we've tried to do what we can here. But as Commissioner Mencken pointed out in his concluding remarks, this is a one-year policy. We don't expect it to solve all the issues that have been brought to our attention. We hope that you will all stay involved. I personally support the idea of continuing to look at Grays Harbor, look at Willapa Bay. I think that in the long run, there needs to be some change. I believe that we have to find a pathway for more sustainable commercial fisheries. We've been looking at that in the Columbia River, and I personally just want to go on the record. I advocate, I support the idea of a commercial fishery that is sustainable. And that is going to take some time. We can't just turn on a dime. Commissioner Holzmiller?
I want to make more of a comment. Thank you, Marin. More of a comment than anything. As a new guy on the commission, and from geographically as far away from this as you can still be and still be in the state, I want to commend the Fish Committee and the staff for the work that has gone into this. I can't sit in on the Fish Committees, but talking to them afterwards, and you just can't even imagine the thought and the sleepless nights these guys have put in on this. They should be commended. It's no easy answer. New guy coming in from the east side, I just shake my head and go, how can this work? Because there's so many different parties with the tribes and everything else. I just want to commend these guys.
Okay. Thank you. Director Anderson?
Thanks, Madam Chair. I wanted to make sure I understood correctly your reference to a one-year policy, and just wanted to have a little discussion about that. Obviously, we're going through a lot of work to craft a new policy, which is going to take some time and multiple years to implement to see if it has the results we want. The commission would certainly expect from us, as you do for other policies, to have an annual report back on the implementation of the policy. But I just wanted to ask the question of the commission, are we thinking about this in terms of just a one-year policy where we would come back and revisit the policy in its entirety next year, or are we talking about policy that would be adopted? Obviously, it would be adaptive and eligible for potential change in the future as we go about implementing it, and where you find out where maybe it's not achieving the objectives. But just so I want to make sure we were all on the same page and understanding exactly what the term of the policy was and how that would work.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because I guess I'm behind the curve on this. Commissioner Mencken?
I think you have to consider the time involved in putting together a policy of this sort and going through the fishery to determine whether the policy is working. The way I have envisioned it is that it's a multi-year policy subject to change at review time or modification at review time. At the same time, I think that what we should be involved in is some really serious thinking about how we would change in the future to accommodate both the fisheries. So I think that what Phil is saying is that it is my vision. Now you ask the rest of the Fish Committee if they think the same way.
Commissioner Carpenter?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I also agree it should be a multi-year policy with an annual review. I just think other than that, I just don't think the work that went into it will be measurable, and we have can use some adaptive needs as we can. So that would be my recommendation.
Commissioner Kehoe?
No, I concur. I did want to ask the staff to kind of let folks here know in the room kind of what the department's plans are in terms of further dialogue and discussion and perhaps explanation of these new recommendations and kind of what the plan is so that people know and further refinement if that's appropriate.
Sure.
Madam Chair, I'm over here.
I'm sorry, Director Anderson.
I wanted to put in an additional request as Jim and Ron are addressing that request from Commissioner Kehoe. We've also been talking a lot about looking and having some technical review of the science that we use, the methodologies that we use. So we both have a public process that will follow, will continue and follow the decision that you ultimately make here before we leave this agenda item. But I also want you to be aware of several other plans that we have to advance the technology and our understanding about trying to manage this fishery with the best science we've got.
Yes, okay. Commissioner Mencken?
If you're ready to move on, I still think we need concurrence by the remainder of the commission as to whether they accept these recommendations.
Right. We do need to vote.
Yeah.
And all we are voting on is an amendment of the draft policy to incorporate the recommendations of the Fish Committee. And that document will then go out to the public for further review. And we would consider final adoption in February. So all we're talking about is, at this point, is does the full commission want to incorporate the recommendations of the Fish Committee? I think we should vote. Would someone like to make a motion? Commissioner Smith?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that the commission adopt the amendments of the draft to the draft policy of the Grace Harbor Salmon Management Plan by the Fish and Wildlife by the Fish Committee of the Fish and Wildlife Commission, the five recommendations into the draft policy.
Commissioner Mencken has seconded the motion to incorporate the recommendations of the Fish Committee into the draft policy. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Motion carries. Thank you all. So I hope you all understand what we just did. We now have a policy that's been shaped. We've provided staff with guidance about the kind of draft policy that we will be considering in February. So I hope you'll all come back. I think we'll probably be in the same room in February. We'll consider adoption of that policy at that time. Thank you.
Madam, what happened to that?
Yeah.
Miranda?
You know,
Okay. We are back in order. Well, that was a lively conversation. Let's get back to a more calm subject, right? We've reached... Oh, I'm sorry. Director Anderson wanted to make a statement first.
Well, there was just a couple of little cleanup spots on our last agenda item that wanted to just touch on what's going to happen here in the next few weeks in terms of the public interaction and with our advisory group. And also wanted to just give you a quick overview of some of the efforts that were taken to improve our management of Grace Harbor fisheries, everything from release mortality rates to catch counting to preseason forecasts, where we have those opportunities. Before I ask Jim and Ron to do that, and I appreciate all the commissioners who offer their appreciation to staff for the work that they have done on this. It's really been an extraordinary not only workload but effort by them. The three people who really have been carrying the majority of the workload are, of course, Jim Scott, his great leadership, Ron Warren, and Kurt Hughes. When you ask for more data, generally they go back to their office and pick up the phone and call Kurt and say, "Here, I want this." So while we haven't seen Kurt at the Fish Committee meetings too much and stuff, but another great, big part of our team. So just wanted to acknowledge those three folks for all the work that they did and just ask them to briefly address Commissioner Kehoe's question and just the other pieces of what we're trying to do to improve Grace Harbor management.
We will try to take the recommendations, place them into the draft policy as quickly as possible. We have scheduled an advisory committee meeting Monday night, this coming Monday night at the Region 6 Montesano office from 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock, with a public comment period after that meeting. And then we follow that up with another public workshop, our final public workshop in this process, on Wednesday night at the Montesano City Hall, which will just be soliciting public comment. As we get the draft out with, hopefully with the news release from the commission meeting, we'll be soliciting public comment until the next commission meeting, and we'll provide those roll-ups to you at the next commission meeting prior to consideration of adoption of the new policy. So,
thank you. Thanks for that.
Good.
If I could just add one more concept there. And we've been anticipating that the commission would move forward with Grace Harbor policy. And certainly there's strong policy guidance. Clear policy guidance is really important. But below that, it's important for staff to carry it down to another level. And you have heard in the public comments the interest in driving that down to the actual on-the-ground fishery management. There's a statement in the draft policies that number 12, the department shall seek to improve fishery management and technical tools through improved fishery monitoring, the development of new tools, and rigorous assessment of fishery models and parameters. And our thought process at the staff level is to be initiating that aggressive improvement in technical methods now as the policy continues to be refined. And so we're anticipating that we're going to have a independent audit of the computations of the fishery planning model that's used for planning the Grace Harbor fisheries. We're also anticipating that we'll have some collaborative workshops with stakeholders. Well, we will be looking to make sure that we're using the best technical information to use in our estimates of release mortality rates, for example, in the commercial fishery or in the recreational fishery. So wanted to just give you a little bit of information beyond the policy. What's the department doing at that next level below? Thank you.
Thank you. Well, thank you both so much for all your hard work. We've said it over and over again. We appreciate it, but it's sincerely stated. We do. Without you, we could not do what we do.